This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Life is life. A mountain railroad with an engine that's brave. We must make the run successful from the
Ralph Winterroad Show. You got Ralph Winterroad the second out of Alaska and Mark Mays out of Oklahoma. And we're talking about solutions. How to fight these guys. We know we're getting screwed. The problem is, what do we do about it? To go back with knowledge and take these guys on. That's what this show's about today. And what I've established, again, because it's so important, you cannot fight agencies with code, because the Federal Register Act of 1935 mandates any agency that has any general effect or legal or general applicability or legal effect shall be published in the Federal Register. And if it's not in the Federal Register, you don't have notice. They're done. And it also says, if it's in the Federal Register, everybody's got to take judicial notice. That's one of the first things you got to understand. In the administrative world, what do they take judicial notice of? Regulations. This is how I exposed tax court. I got into tax court. I used to say, go to tax court. Got in there and said, take judicial notice of the code or this. And the court come back and says, we can't take judicial notice. Well, I says, well, what are we doing here? If you're not, I'll think of it in a minute, the actual words. Your standard of review. What are you using if you can't take judicial notice of the code? Why are you using it? Duh. That's a pretty good question. You think, Mark?
I do.
Yeah, that's what I think. Well, if you're not going to use the code to make rulings on the code, what the heck are you using the code for? Why are you using it? It's a con.
Mm-hmm.
It was Nick's out of Florida when I finally figured that out. You got to push these guys because it's all a con. It's all a con. It's all a lie. So how do I fight agencies? Number one, it's got to be in the Federal Register. So I have notice of it, if it's going to have general applicability or legal effect. And they have to take judicial notice of it. So the next question becomes, how do I know that it has general applicability and legal effect? Because that was the next major obstacle that Mr. Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his New Deal had. And he had a study done in 1937. I got it on what's going on. How do I get control of these? And it said right in there, Congress and the president has no control of the agencies as of 1937. They print it, folks. Only the courts, and that's very limited. Congress had no control of the agencies. The president has no control of the agencies. And they're doing thousands upon thousands of these things every year. So what was the solution? They started the Walter Logan Act in 1940, and the president, FDR, vetoed it. So they did the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946, and its only reason was something called substantive regulations. And they are supposed to have the force and effect of law. In reality, it's also the same thing as under Title 42, 1981, color of law. It looks like, but it's not. But we'll just say it has a force and effect of law. That's the term that Chrysler V. Brown uses. So how do I identify a regulation that's in the Federal Register under the CFR? They're all listed by CFRs. They're compilated together. I have to go to the bottom. I have to look at the individual Federal Register publications. And what do I look for? They passed the Administrative Procedures Act in 1946. They put it in the 1946 code, which I have. They don't say a thing about it. They redid it in 1968, and they don't reference the APA, even though everybody still uses the APA. Technically, they repealed the Administrative Procedures Act, and they put it into code. Now, why? I asked Westlaw, why don't they show where it is today? He has no response, so I don't know. Then I also looked under the Federal Register Act. It's never been repealed. And they have that in the code today in Title 44, starting at 1501. And you know what it says? Those little yellow flags. I clicked on one of them, and it says proposed legislation. I called up Westlaw. I said, what the heck is that? He says, well, I don't know. There's no statutory authority. It's proposed legislation, yet it's in the code for the Federal Register. They leave out a whole bunch of stuff. So the key to this whole thing is, which I am documenting to the nth degree, the Federal Register Act was put in the Federal Register in 1935 and 1938. It's never been amended. And in 1946, they put some of the APA in there. Never been amended. That is the law of the administrative state. That's what they have to take judicial notice of. So the question becomes then, what's getting back to the original, if I can't exclude it as a Part 301, housekeeping, or a 601 point something as procedure, because the other ones don't normally, only the IRS does that, but I've seen, they hide the statutory authority where they're getting the 301s. You got to look in Westlaw to see it, but they don't put it for the general public to find out. So what do I do? Any regulation, you must go to the bottom. It'll be under credits or source. It's got to be the Federal Register publication. You have to open it up, and the code that they is codified today is 5 USC 553 or 553B. You just search on 553. Is it there or not? And they have two ways to do it. The formal way, which is be like Congress, would be technically formal, is we actually take a identified vote of the House and the Senate, and we have the president sign it, or he gets veto. We actually count the number of votes. I've never seen one. There is no formal. Never seen one yet. Because they can't. That's another story, but we'll leave that alone right now without complicating this. So, the bottom line is, I go to the bottom in the CFR. I look it up if it's for guns, transportation, it's for CDC, whatever they're using. I open it up. I go to the bottom. Open the Federal Register. Of course, in Westlaw, it's real easy because they're all hotlinked. If you don't have Westlaw, you got to screw around and go to the web page for that and look at it. It's a pain in the butt. But you search for 553. The formal, it will say, they have to do it two ways. They have to do a proposed, and they have to do a final rule. Okay? Now, what you will see, you will never see a formal. Not going to happen. Now, here's the cons that they try to get slipped past the public because you don't know. Because we're not taught. Even most of these lawyers are not taught this. And they print it, by the way. I found this in the Senate rule, report number 7, the 752 in 1946. They explained it out. Once I saw that, then I could find court cases on it. And here's the way the other part works. Here's what they will say. Okay. Number one, 553 has got to be there. Say, we're going to do it. Never see it. If 553 is not there, it's garbage. They do that. They will also say, we're going to have comments. But 553 will not be there. That's not it either. It has to say 553. We're going to abide by it. You will never see one that I've seen yet that meets all of the requirements. And this is what is difficult, which I didn't understand how to expose it with their stuff by law. What they will say, it's 553 and it's impractical, it's unnecessary, or contrary to the public interest. They will cite all three or one of any one of these. So they'll say, it's 553, but it's impractical. It's unnecessary, and it's against the public interest. What the heck does that mean? How do you defeat that? With their stuff. We have to have the federal. We have to have something that's in the Federal Register to defeat it. They leave out one part. They cannot use this as called an emergency or necessity as an escape clause. It says a true and supported or supportable finding of necessity or emergency must be made and published. So when they quote all three of these, there's no emergency. They never cite one. Why can't you do the formal? Because you can't, according to law. The law forbids it. The Constitution forbids it. You can't do formal. Okay? You can't do the informal either and get around it because they will quote impractical, unnecessary, and contrary to the public interest. That's the other one you'll find. They always leave out the emergency, necessity. That's in 553 also. They don't do that. Well, if you don't do that, okay. And what I didn't understand is when fighting this, I always went in under 5 U.S.C. 706, arbitrary and capricious, and I found a court case. He said, no, you don't understand. It's not arbitrary and capricious. You have to go down to the bottom. It's not according to procedure. Oh, damn, it's so simple. In other words, like Congress, you can't pass a bill if you don't have a vote on it. Can you? It's procedure.
Nope.
It's procedure that they're violating. It's not arbitrary and capricious that it's smoke and mirrors. It's that they didn't follow the procedure. I fell over. I said, God, a minute, Ralph. It's right there. I just never read any farther down on those 5 USC 706. This is like an Indiana Jones movie where you've seen the one where the Temple of Doom or whatever, he comes in and he steps on a stone and something happens. And he's, I mean, it's hard to, how do you get through all this nonsense? There is a way.
Well, it's not designed. It's not designed for you to get through it.
Well,
most
that's
people
what
get
I'm
snared.
That's what I'm putting together is you will never see the formal. So it's the informal you'll always fight. Or they will say, we're doing comments. Well, wait, I don't care if you allow comments or not. It's irrelevant. You have to say 553, formal or informal. It's got to be there. That's their stuff. That's Chrysler V. Brown. Okay? And if you use the impractical, unnecessary, and contrary to the public interest, you leave out the last procedural step, which is mandated. Why are you using this as an emergency to bypass the formal way, like in Congress, of taking a vote by senator or by representative? Why are you doing that? What's the big emergency? Well, there ain't none.
Ralph, who gets to declare that emergency? Does Congress have to declare that emergency?
No, it's the agency.
So the agency can declare the emergency that they're basing their regulation on?
The emergency, it would be like in things go back, like we were doing regulating butter, and we don't have time to go through all the nonsense, so we need to get this regulation out there immediately so that we can control the butter or whatever, or the amount of wheat that's being sowed or something. We don't have time to screw with it. But it gets even better. Why they don't do it? Because you go look at, what are the definitions? Always use definitions. Impractical means a situation in which the due and required execution of an agency functions would be unavoidably prevented by its undertaking public rulemaking procedures. And now that, do you understand what they just said? It'd be prevented.
I do. Like if something was happening so quick, by the time it would go through the normal procedures, it's already, whatever they're trying to act on has already had an effect on the public or whatever. So, you know,
what they're saying is impractical would inevitably prevent them from undertaking the public rulemaking, because you'd say, hey, this is nonsense. So we're saying it's impractical. We don't want to hear from you because you would point out it's nonsense.
Well, one thing I would think of, let's say like when they had the tainted lettuce, they had this lettuce coming out of California that had salmonella poisoning on
right.
it, or contamination, I guess is a better word. By the time they would go through like normal regulating, you know, making a regulation to try to control that situation, it'd be too late. You know, you'd have a lot of people already affected by it, so it's an emergency and they're stepping in and they're shutting down the distribution of that lettuce until they can figure out where the source of it is coming from. Wouldn't that be like an example of a legitimate emergency?
If they would do it properly, and I've never seen one yet. I haven't looked on the one on lettuce, but I've never seen one yet where they cite the emergency.
Right.
If you have an emergency, why don't you cite it? Huh? And they say that's why we use impractical, is because it would be unavoidably prevented by its undertaking public rulemaking. In other words, we couldn't make this rule under the definition of impractical because you would cite and say, hey, you got no authority or whatever.
Right.
Unnecessary goes into, says, well, the public is not particularly involved. Really? If you're making rules on guns, but I'm not interested in guns, is that a reason to bypass me? No. And then they have.
And that's also an area that's also an area that there's no emergency on. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like they can't go through their normal regulation process to, you know, create a regulation. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's right. not like an immediate emergency.
Yep.
And they're just bypassing all of it. We'll be right back.
Bypassing procedure.
Thank you. folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Okay, well, we're back here. So, does this make sense so far, Mark?
Yes, yes, it makes sense.
So let me go over the whole thing.
Okay. No, I'm just saying the challenge is enforcing it, you know, getting the court to go by what you're presenting to them.
But nobody's doing it. They're talking statutory.
Or the agency.
I gotcha. Nobody is doing anything to grab the court by the conids and say, hey, this is where the action's at. They keep fighting over code. And occasionally a regulation. I looked at a tax evasion. The first one is there has to be a notice of deficiency. So what do they put in the jury instructions? There got to be a substantive debt. That don't mean anything. There's three parts. First of all, there's got to be a notice of deficiency. You got to knowingly know about it. That's the other part. But then they go to this willful stuff. They argue willfulness, but they don't argue what's going on. You won't see the 301 reg. A notice of deficiency is a 301 reg. They don't ever bring it up. They print it. They printed all of the 301 regs in 1967. And they're all founded from 1967 on, based on 7805, which is a general grant of authority, which is interpretive, and the courts have said over and over and over, it's nothing. Chris, about a question, comment?
Well, Yes, as a matter of fact, Ralph, and Mark, I think it is, I'm listening, and what becomes apparent to me in my ability to perceive what's going on is you're talking about the informal, which only applies to these private for private foreign corporate profits agencies that are created by the president and under his executive power.
Let me stop you right there.
Okay.
These agencies are external establishments. They sit outside the government. And there's a whole list of them, by the way. And what they do is, it's not a corporate entity. They are external to the government. They started back in the 1880s because they said, we want politics out of our agencies. We want to create this utopian. So we're going to create, they call them external establishments, or there's a couple other words they use, outside. Congress and the president get around and put somebody in his head, and then they operate on their own. And Congress, then, the only way we can grab a hold of them, which is what Franklin Delano Roosevelt found out, is they have to publish in the Federal Register. And then the APA come along and said, okay, now that you're publishing in the Federal Register, this is what it takes to have force and effect of law so that we, the people, can distinguish what the heck you're up to.
Well, I hear you, Ralph, but I don't see where that's at odds of what my point was, is the reason that we had this dichotomy between the informal versus the formal is because on the informal basis, they're only regulating for their private agencies, the private policies, statutes, and codes to regulate their employees under that particular agency. When they go into the public realm...
Stop you again. Okay, the formal... First of all, they're only about citizens of the United States. And that doesn't have any, technically, if you understand what's going on there, that's what they're ruling over. They cannot constitutionally pass regulations that have the force and effect of law that deal with you being a citizen of Nevada. And they have two ways under procedure that is mandated that they have to do, formal or informal. You never see the formal. The informal, they leave out one step of the procedure because these are procedure. They operate under procedure. They don't have anything to do with the laws of the United States. It's procedure that these agencies operate under. So when you understand that issue, then you have to get them on their procedure that they do not follow. And when they do not follow procedure, they lose. And I've got cases on that. Okay?
Well, I agree, and I think you're exactly right about that, although I realize the U.S. citizen is an invention of Congress by their plenary powers to create property under their scope and sphere of authority as cattle or chattel they manage. And this may be what they're using, creating the pretext that they're employees of the corporation. But I think that there are two different spheres, and that's in Downs versus Bidwell, 1901 case, where it says, effectively, we have two different governments, one within the constitutional boundaries and those without. I think that's the corporate versus the de jure.
Nope, that's not what they come up with. It's called the headless fourth branch of government under agencies. That was the research, and if you want to see the whole 400 pages, I can send it to you, or an excerpt of it. This is a research done by the government. They're called the headless fourth branch of government, created by agencies that are, in essence, many governments sitting outside of the Constitution. That's what FDR's research came out with, and they call it the headless fourth branch of government. And they're called independent regulatory entity. Pardon?
Let me ask one more question. If the president creates the agencies, how can the be created be greater than the creator?
Hold on a minute.
After the break.
Hold on a minute. Gotta go to break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
so, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Please view, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Stop Terrorism. Please contact us if you or anyone you know who wants to be on our show at thetruthpharmacy@gmail.com. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Amazon customer: it's amazing. I just ordered my second bottle. In 1 month, my blood pressure dropped significantly. I no longer get chest pain after I exercise. The reviews are spot on. My target is to get off of BP meds, and if it keeps going like this, I see a light at the end of the tunnel. Amazon customer: Extendivite works great. This product has made my blood pressure and cholesterol stable. I highly recommend it. Amazon customer: excellent herbal formula. I've been using it to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
First of all, the president doesn't create these agencies. Congress does. Now, the IRS is up for debate whether it technically was created or not by law. But Congress creates these agencies in 1935. They said federal agency means the president of the United States. They have no statutory authority under the Constitution to do that. Outside of the Constitution, which is where they are operating, okay, because the people that are voting on them are citizens of the United States, we have turned our government totally over since 1913 to Congress. I got 110 cases that says United States of America is a sovereign body politic. United States of America is Congress. They changed the government's name in 1913 from United States to United States of America, which is Congress. I got 110 cases to document this. It happened when the 17th Amendment passed, because there are no parties to the Constitution of the United States. The people of the several states no longer existed because we said we're a citizen of the United States. They did the 17th Amendment and they left out the word several. And it's just said states. And that happened all of 1913. I got it all documented. It's a fact. Proven. Okay? So what they did is, in 1935, they made the administrative state official. March 3rd, 1933, Hoover repealed 1,006 statutes. The very next day, Franklin Delano Roosevelt came in. He's the first president that did not take the constitutional oath. They started the National Recovery Act, and they said it is law. Administrative was law. That's a fact. Okay. Go ahead. What's your question now?
Well, I'm with you, and I think you're correct. And 1913 is also the day they passed the Federal Reserve Act. I think that was basically the taking over of this country and putting it under corporate control fully, although I'm not sure it didn't go back to 1871 D.C. Incorporations Act when they made the D.C. And this seems to be where this corporate model comes by, and I do know that the reason they like to rule by the corporate model rather than the Constitution model is because the corporation is not limited by the constitutional boundaries.
See, what you're trying to do is to make the United States of America as a corporation. They did do that in D.C., but there's many more factors. It's not a simple thing that the United States is just a corporate entity. That's not true.
Isn't that what it says in 28.3002, parenthetical 15?
It does have aspects that operates as a constitution, as a corporation. That is true. But what makes it operate that way is because you and I have said we're citizens of the United States, and as a fact, we have if that status has civil rights, but it has no political rights. It has no inalienable rights. It only has civil rights, and we transferred to Congress our political rights because a citizen of the United States does not have the law, any right of suffrage or the elective franchise. And I got court cases admitting it.
I'll let you go, but it sure seems to me like that citizen of the United States is a very disabling position to be in. Thank you.
There's a way out of it. You got to be your own status and that. That's another issue, but there is a way to get around that. I've got to update it, but I've done that. So Wayne in Texas, you're up next. Question or comment?
Hi, Ralph. Yeah,
hello.
Thanks a lot, Ralph. Good discussion today. Had a couple real quick questions to clarify things in my mind, then a main one. First up, you know, you've talked a lot about statutes and codes today, but no mention of the statutes at large, which I thought were passed by Congress, and they are the ultimate law. And these codes of CFRs, codes and whatever, like Title 28, are really an interpretation of the statutes at large. So I was kind of curious, is that true? Or?
Okay, you've got a very good question. Okay, let me give you a little history. The statutes at large started off as laws of the United States. Then all of a sudden, in the early 1900s, we started to see in the front where it said laws of the United States, we also saw laws of the United States of America. Now, those exist in D.C., territories, and possessions. Then all of a sudden, somewhere around in the I've got to go back in timeline, but around 1920, somewhere along in there. Anyway, all of a sudden, it just become laws of the United States of America. So where did the laws of the United States go? So then all of a sudden, we see the laws of the United States of America and public law. And then in 1936, it's strictly public law. Go look up public law. Do you have a Black's Fourth?
Yes.
Look up public law. It's all PL, public law. It's all nonsense. It's strictly for citizens of the United States because they have created a new court system overlay. The whole thing has been overthrown. We don't have courts of equity, law and equity. There are no constitutional courts. We don't have any elections for any public officers in any of the several states. And technically, we don't have any for the federal offices either. Since the one that's most obvious is 1993, and the one that they're trying to pass now, they put it in like in Breitbart, it's for federal offices. Doesn't anybody have any dang brains to say, okay, well, if this thing is going to federalize it and be for federal offices, that means everybody holds a federal office. Your governor is a federal officer. What am I missing here?
Interesting.
I mean, they print this stuff. Does anybody read it? And it's only for citizens of the United States. Of course, the average person doesn't have access to this, that the 15th Amendment, the right to vote, doesn't mean any dang thing except when you show up at the building, you can't discriminate who goes in. But the right of the elective franchise, the right of suffrage, you are not entitled to as a citizen of the United States, and the Supreme Court said so. They don't tell you that, do they?
Yeah, I know you've mentioned that on numerous occasions. Let me jump to number two, because that's a great explanation. But something I can't get square in my mind is there's established federal law, which is, I think, Title 8, Section 1324. It's a violation of federal law to bring in and harbor illegal aliens. So how does Biden, in his executive order, which has no force of law, it's just public policy, how does that override a federal law?
Well, they're not really... You get a real good one, because the bottom line is, under 8 U.S.C. 1101, they define an illegal alien as a citizen of the United States or something. They won't touch that definition. Why? Because that would expose the whole con of a, quote, citizen of the United States. Now, I'm not familiar. I have not looked at that particular statute. The thing, does it say means? Is it illegal alien? Is that the word that they're using?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, legal alien is definitely. I haven't looked at the whole thing, but I just recall this one from other research.
It's 8 U.S.C. 1104?
1324.
Oh, 1324. 8 U.S.C. 1324?
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. While we talk to this next one, I'll type in the Westlaw and take a look and give you an answer. I don't know, but the reason why they won't go to the definition of illegal alien, because it's the thing that you got to remember is 8 U.S.C. 1101A 22. It gives us a thing. It says a national of the United States. Now, that's on your passport, by the way. It's also on the application. It says citizen/national of the United States. What is that? A citizen of the United States, or B, you owe permanent allegiance, but you're not a citizen of the United States. That's us. Because if you read Slaughterhouse and those cases, I got congressional records, we can take on the character of a citizen of the United States like you can take on the character of being a tenant or a landlord and go to court. But you are, in reality, a citizen of Texas, domiciled in Texas. That's your real status. They can't take it away. That's who you really are.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I sure hope you put together that that declaration so that people can start using that and get their status straight.
I will. I'm going to update it. I've used it with great success with myself to get myself out of Social Security, taking out 15% and all that other nonsense. But I'll be putting that out on my IRS list. You get on my IRS list and you'll see it.
Okay, all right. And Ralph, one last thing, and I appreciate the time. On these mask mandates, there's states like Texas dropping their mandates and allowing people to just walk in and shop, you know, normally. But there's been a lot of fighting about private companies still enforcing their own, you know, corporate mask policy. And I was wondering if that would be in some kind of violation of federal law against public accommodations.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do here. I got the... Alaska Club in Alaska. They chose down the steam, closed it down. I finally got them to cough up the reason why, the CDC, and it's all smoke. And I gave them the stuff. Then they reopened it. I said, okay, you give me the reasons why you closed it. Now, why are you opening it? They won't talk to me. Okay? So I'm going to get around and sue them. As soon as I get, if I'm going to get that $1,400, I'm going to take them on and say, I want to know the science behind what you're doing, because I have what's called an express contract. They have all these things available, and you took away some of them, and then you put them back, and I am in fear of my life. My God, I believe Fauci is right up there next to God. He scared the piss out of me. I want to know what you're relying on. I'm in fear of my life. I'm having nightmares, right?
That's pretty cool. But as a public accommodation, don't these corporations, they cannot deny participation or equal access, you know, based on the stupid company policy that overrides federal law?
If it has access, if it's public access, I would say they would be in great trouble, because what you need to do is ask them what science you're relying upon. And if they're relying upon the CDC, they got a hold of a smoke signal put out by somebody that we don't know where the fire's at. There's nothing there. CDC is smoke. I've looked at their they're a mass stuff. It's smoke. But unless you know what I'm talking about today, you're never going to figure it out. That's exactly what I'm going to be publishing on my IRS list. And then I'm going to be showing examples with the IRS, especially so that people can see it and then start to understand it. Because, and put it into a one line, I got to get back into Adobe Illustrator because pictures tell a lot. Just like cartoons tell a lot. You can tell a lot in a darn cartoon that you could spend a whole page trying to explain.
Sure. Okay. Ralph, I'll let you go finish up your show here, and I appreciate it very much.
Okay. Scott, Nevada, question, comment?
This is in regard. Yeah, Ralph, this is in regards to that last caller. I have two Supreme Court cases that say if there is a conflict between the statutes at large and the United States Code, the statutes at large will prevail. You want them?
Always. Absolutely.
Because okay. Are you ready to go?
Makes the code.
Yeah. Well, okay. I can, if that last caller, I hope he's got a pen and pencil handy. It's Stephen versus United States. So Stephen versus United States, 319 U.S. 242, 423, 319 U.S. 423, and that's a 1943 case. And the second one is United States versus Weldon, that's W-E-L-D-E-N, 377 U.S. 95, 377 U.S. 95. And that's a 1964 case. So, like, you'll notice this, especially with, like, say, the Internal Revenue Code. It's they stem from the statutes at large, and it's been all twisted around. But you can go back to the statutes at large. Like, say, the enforcement provisions for the IRS, almost all of them come out of the tobacco and alcohol taxes, and the implementing regulations are at Title 27, right where they belong. And there are no implementing regulations at Title 26.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there. There's a couple of really important issues. First of all, Title 26 has never been put in as positive law. The court said, you know, it looks like it, so technically you're supposed to use IRC, Internal Revenue Code. Okay? There is no such thing as Title 26 in the code. It's never been done. I got the case law says so. But they say, well, the words are the same, so we're just going to wink, wink, blink, blink. The second issue is when you talk about implementing regulations, their implementing regulations have no force and effect of law against you and me. That is what they cover, their implementing regulations, as interpretive or housekeeping. They can't, they don't give a hoot what they. They can't implement anything unless Congress says a specific, itemized, definitive thing, make a regulation. And I've never seen one yet.
Okay, I understand that about the APA, but that's not what I was getting at. What the Government Printing Office has said, what the Government Printing Office has said, and so we all know Title 26 is not the law, so but it refers back to a law. And you can trace it back through the legislative history, and it's easy. And the enforcement mechanisms are right where they belong, in Title 27. You know, implementing regulations. And I saw a guy get off two counts of 72.
Okay, let me stop you there. You can't use what's in Title 27 for what's in Title 26. Title 27 does go back to Title 26, but Title 27 CFRs has exactly the same problem as Title 26. There's no force and effect of gun laws, alcohol, all that. You would think there would be, but there's not.
Ralph, let me flesh this out. This guy is charged under Title 26, 7203, willful failure to file. The implementing regulations are at Title 27. A two-page letter to the prosecutor got both of those charges dismissed because if there's no implementing regulations, there's nothing to enforce. There's nothing to enforce at Title 26.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there because I happen to know that 7201 is a 301 reg. And it's in Title 26. And it talks about filing. Yeah. It's a 301 rig, and that's a fact. It's not in Title 27.
Yeah. Well, this worked. They got the guy off the hook. He walked two counts. And it's something else with this mask stuff. I think we got that ADA, American Disabilities Act. You go into a store, can't you just say, if I have the mask on, I can't breathe? And you don't have to ask, you don't have to tell them what your disability is. And then they're going to get you on trespassing. And then you tell the arresting officer that, look, under ADA, I can't breathe if I wear the mask. Well, it's a, number one, it's a $75,000 fine under the ADA. And then a wrongful arrest is $26,000 for every 20 minutes under trespassing.
Some of that should work, but I'm not going to put my name to it. Okay?
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with Front Sight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, Front Sight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly a million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, Front Sight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Okay, we're back here. We got two callers left, so Florida, go ahead. Derek in Florida, you got a question or comment here, and then we got to get one more caller in here in about 5 minutes, okay?
Yep, quick question. All right, so the mandates, and I'm in Florida, so the governor said there is no mandate, but in Jacksonville, where I'm at,
there's no mandate for what?
Mask.
Oh, mask. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. And then, but in the stat, so do, my question is, do ordinance and mandates from the mayor supersede the actual Florida statute which says you cannot wear you can't wear a mask in public.
They've tried that with gun laws. They can't technically get away with it if you take it to court. No.
I know. I have the law right here. I mean, it, so statute isn't law, right? I want to know what.
Statute is not law?
No, I'm asking.
Oh, no, statute is law of Florida. The governor,
right.
When the governor
right.
says there's no mandate, that rules over all these other guys trying to do it and these mayors and all these other ones. They've tried that
right.
with ordinances on gun law stuff, and it's been overruled because it would be hodgepodge, and you would have no way to know going from one city or one jurisdiction to another where one says, oh, you're going to jail, and the other one says, oh, it's fine. That's the reason why they do that. State
okay,
law
I got,
rules.
I got Title 46, 876.12, wearing mask, hood, or other devices on public way. All that's illegal, and they're all breaking the law. So the cops, everybody. So I'm confused. So I see a statute here. I guess my question is, what supersedes this statute?
A federal statute, technically nothing. But the bottom line is Congress can't rule against citizens of the United States, so they have to go through agencies. So anytime the Congress makes those statutes, they have to invoke an agency like CDC to put a regulation out, which they don't, because if you go look, there's smoke. Congress can't
go
directly to you.
Well, I don't know if it's federal, but it says Florida state statute.
Oh, it's Florida state statute. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah, well, technically
Florida
what they're doing...
Florida
they're
state statute. Florida state statute, Title 46, 86.12, wearing a mask, hood, or other device on public way is illegal. And everybody's doing it.
Well, if they've, your legislature has passed a statute on that?
Florida state statute.
And it says it's illegal
Florida state
to have
statute,
one on the public way? Or illegal to not have one?
Yes, sir. I'll read it out. No person or persons over 16 shall wear a mask, hood, or device. Any portion of face is hidden, concealed, or covered as to conceal the identity of the wearer, enter upon or be appear upon any lane, walk, alley, street, road, highway, public way.
Email me that number on IRS. At AlaskaMinuteman.com, and I'll give you an answer. IRS at AlaskaMinuteman.com, because we're running out of time here. I wanted to give Pat a...
Well, the issue, all right. Real quick, the issue right. with that is to conceal identity. So it's the intent of the mask wearing. So if you're wearing a mask for public safety because of health, that's not the same as trying to conceal your identity. So there's a difference.
But the thing is, if you put a mask on for public health, you can do your identity.
Did you know you could go into a mask? Did you know you could go into a bank?
Well, say
did you know you could go into
me.
A bank and wear a mask and get arrested?
I'm sorry, say again?
Did you know you can go into a bank now and not wear a mask and get arrested?
Oh, yeah, there are places where they're doing that. I mean, it's legal.
Yeah. Thanks all the callers. Appreciate you calling in.
We will see you next Sunday, God willing, if the Chinese haven't taken over the White House.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. While we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country, here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network